I welcome all of you for Sutta teaching session. So we are taking one by one different suttas which is more related to our practice, and basically this time we have taken Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, which is also coming in Majjhima Nikaya. You probably can remember, first we have taken Sabbasava Sutta, that is also in Majjhima Nikaya, and this Sutta, Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, is also in Majjhima Nikaya. Actually, Majjhima Nikaya has three books, and this is in the third book. So this is quite relevant to our practice, so that's why I have selected this Sutta. Last Sunday, actually, I have summarized the story behind this sutta, that is where Kim Pukkusati became a monk after hearing the teaching of the Buddha from his unseen friend King Bimbisara. So he was quite confident on Buddha and the Dhamma and the Sangha, and he himself bought a ball and a robe, and then he became a monk, and now he is coming in search of the Buddha. And it was a quite long distance from Avanti to Travasti, and Buddha knew the story that he is approaching him, and he also might have known that Venerable Pukkusati don't have long life. Unfortunately, he has to face some tragedy, so therefore Buddha approaches him before this thing happened. So Venerable Pukkusati, on the way between Shravasti and Avanti, he got late, and now he decided to stay at a potter's warehouse or potter's workshop, because at that time it seems that that is the only place he could accommodate. Now he got the permission from the potter, and then he's staying there. And Buddha also, leaving Shravasti, he is also coming to the same place, and then asked permission from the potter. And potter said that I don't mind, but still there is another monk already residing in the place, so if he don't mind, you can be there. So then Buddha approached Venerable Pukkusati, and he too agreed that there are enough space available. So as a result, now Buddha also going to stay with Venerable Pukkusati. And Venerable Pukkusati already has good concentration. So as a result, he liked to enjoy his blissful states available in concentration. So as a result, he is spent long time in concentration practices. And Buddha knew that he is not yet ready to listen to him. So therefore, Buddha too get on to some samapatti, and he too staying in some sort of concentration or maybe attainment. And after a while, then Buddha understood Venerable Pukkusati has a pleasant abiding, and now he is capable of listening to him, he may listen to him. And as a result, he asked from Venerable Pukkusati whether is it all right if I preach you Dhamma. Then Venerable Pukkusati didn't know that this is the Buddha on behalf of him that he went forth. And Buddha actually verified it from Venerable Pukkusati whether he know Buddha or whether he can recognize the Buddha on whom he has become a monk. So all this information Buddha inquired from Venerable Pukkusati, and Pukkusati mentioned that he has gone forth on behalf of the Buddha, but he has never seen the Buddha and even couldn't recognize the Buddha. And the beauty here is that Buddha didn't go to introduce himself, telling that I am the teacher, I am the Buddha. Rather, he simply get the permission from Venerable Pukkusati to preach Dhamma. So Venerable Pukkusati answered him, yes friend, you may preach and I am going to listen. So now Buddha is explaining this Dhatu Vibhanga. So Dhatu Vibhanga literally means the exposition of elements. So at the first stage, it has a summary. This person consists of six elements. This person consists of six bases of contact. 18 kinds of mental exploration. Has four foundations. And again, when one is established well on these four foundations, what is the kind of the ultimate result? And how one may behave according to these four foundations. So those are the summary in this sutta. Now Buddha is going to explain one by one. Now, as you know that we are identifying ourselves like a person, I am a man, I am a woman, I am a mother, I am a father, I am a child, I am a doctor, I am an engineer, I am a lawyer, I am a farmer. Likewise, so we have different descriptions about ourselves, or different identifications. But here Buddha is giving us a very clear indication that all those are simply conventional, conceptual, and I can simply explain the so-called person with six elements. So, first element is the earth element, then water element, fire element, air element, space element, and consciousness element. So these are the six elements Buddha explaining, and I will go through them today. And this is one kind of an explanation. So for this so-called person, there is a kind of an explanation telling that this so-called person consists of merely six elements. So this is in a way something to ponder, because we sometimes take all these our conventional realities, all these conventional norms very strictly. I mean, we think all of them are very true. But here when the Buddha is putting that in a different perspective, we may have to sometimes struggle a bit to understand that, because we are so used to think in a particular pattern. So if one is telling that it is not the way that you think is correct, but I have a different explanation, different perspective, then we have to think about it in a different way. So this is one explanation Buddha is giving. This so-called person is nothing but six elements. Then he is giving another explanation. He is telling this so-called person is six sense contact. You know, we have six senses: eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. So according to those faculties, now Buddha is giving another explanation. This so-called person consists of six bases of contact. So you know, to eye, the form is contact. Then for ear, the sound is contact. For nose, the smells is contact. Then for tongue, tastes are contacting. Then for body, the tactile tangibles are contact. Then for mind, various mind objects become the contact. So when they come together, we call contact. And say for example, when we see something, so basically, eye and the form together makes eye consciousness, some sort of cognitive power is there. So as a result, we consider all these happen at once instead of understanding the relation between these in a cause and effect way, causal way. So we simply think, okay, there is eye, there is form. Or on the other hand, there is I that is belong to me, and form that is outside, and now there is I am looking at something, so and so. So like that kind of a deluded understanding we have. In a way, it's a kind of a misunderstanding. And now Buddha is giving a different idea, different explanation through this whole scenario. He simply says, there is I, there is form, and then there is I consciousness arising, but we take all these three together and then we call it eye contact. Similarly, ear contact, similarly, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, and mind contact. And then, actually, these things I have already explained. And then, today I like to cover this part. And now Buddha is giving a third explanation about this so-called person. He is saying, this person consists of 18 kinds of mental exploration. Now he is going to the mind. And how are we using our mind to our day-to-day experiences? So this is not that difficult to understand. So we have 6 faculties, as I already explained. So when seeing with eye, what is happened to the mind? When seeing, when hearing with ear, when hearing sounds with the ear, what is happening to our mind? When smelling an odor with the nose, what is happened to the mind? How it is going to behave? When tasting a flavor with tongue, what is happened to the mind? When touching a tangible with the body, how our mind going to behave? And when cognizing a mind object, mental object, how again the mind going to behave? So accordingly, Buddha is giving another explanation about for this so-called person. Now if we take first one, when we see a form from our eye, so we if assume that it generates some kind of a happiness, some kind of a joy. Now we are exploring more and more in order to generate that happiness again. So now we are, in a way, we are simply acting according to the pleasure principle. So when we see something, so if it is joyful, if it is generating any kind of unhappiness, we want to have more happiness, more joy. So we are exploring more and more. We are examining more and more information there, more and more detail there, in order to generate more happiness. So we are now using the mind to explore it in order to produce joy. Similarly, when we see something which is generating some unhappiness, sorrow, sometimes we may think we simply turn our eye somewhere, some other place, other side, and we want to stop that unhappiness. True. But still our mind already has captured the details, already has recognized, okay, this is so-called this person, that person. So likewise, we already has registered this form, and as a result, again mind is going through it. Again mind recognizing what was there, and he's thinking, the mind is more and more thinking about it, proliferating about it. But more and more sorrow or grief is going to generate, but still we do that. So mind behaves in such a manner to generate more and more grief, more and more unhappiness. Say for example, you have seen something unpleasant, but our mind unfortunately like to be there, like to explore more and more information, which is still generating more unpleasantness, more sorrow. But we do that, maybe knowingly, maybe unknowingly. We do that. So that is another way of mind's behavior. On the other hand, if we are seeing another object, suppose you are traveling by your car, by a bus, at that time, suppose you have seen another vehicle or another shop or whatever it is, and sometimes you make it interesting. And as a result, you want to explore more and more. It doesn't generate much happiness, doesn't generate so much of grief, but it is generating some kind of an equanimous feeling. But we are now exploring that particular object. We are again and again searching more and more detail, because at that moment we like that equanimity. So depending on that feeling tone, now we are exploring. So as you can, similarly, you can apply the same explanation to the ears. Say when we hear a sound, if it is a beautiful sound, suppose if it is a song, maybe a melody, so we want to listen to it more carefully. So we are attentively listening it. So we may turn our ear. We may even record it. So likewise, we have kind of a pleasure-seeking attitude to learn or to see more and more detail, because it is generating some joy, some happiness. Similarly, if someone is blaming us, the opposite happens. So we are trying to turn our ear there and again want to exactly know what he has mentioned, whether they are correct. So likewise, we are still generating grief or sorrow, but our mind is in a way exploring what is heard. We are examining what is being heard. So this is the situation. Similarly, if we hear another sound, probably if we consider it is important, then again we using our mind, we are trying to get more and more detail. We may turn our ear to that direction in order to get more precise information. So likewise, you can understand even through the ear. So we have these three ways of explorations. We are using our mind according to the ear contact, according to the information coming from the ear, according to the sounds. So as a result, mind is very occupied. Mind has no peace, no rest. Rather, mind is exploring in order to generate joy, or in order to generate grief, or in order to generate any kind of an equanimity. Similarly, the tongue. Say, let's go to the odor. Various smells are there. So if it is pleasant, we may explore more detail. If it is unpleasant, still we may be exploring more detail. If it is some neutral, still we may explore. So our mind has no rest. So you can apply this information to your own mind. So how it is behaving? Is it like to stay still? Or is it always seeking something? Always agitated? Always want to see? Always want to hear? Always want to sense? Enjoy? So this is the way our mind is operating. And similarly, when we are tasting something, if it is very tasty, then we want to have more. We want to precisely know what are the ingredients. We might have taken the whatever that food and the container and going to read the ingredients, what they have mentioned there, what is the recipe, because we are now interested about it. So we can't keep our mind quiet or mind still, but rather we are using our mind according to the pleasure coming through the tongue. Similarly, if it is bitter, then still we may want to find out in order to avoid maybe in a future instance, we may be using the same attitude to find out more detail. If it is equanimous, sometimes if we think that it is important to know, then still we may can use. Similarly, the body, when we go through any kind of a contact, so we may explore it. The beauty is, even when something comes into the mind, some kind of a mental image, say for example, we don't simply neglect it or we don't simply omit it, rather we are now strengthening it. We are fertilizing it. And as a result, it may even grow. Suppose some kind of a mental image appear, mental object appear, and we give a name, okay, this is my son, this is my daughter, this is my father, this is my brother, this is my mother. So likewise, we are sort of introducing a name to it. And as a result, we fix various other components to it. We are adding various components to it. And basically, we are fabricating it. We can't keep it as it is. Rather, we add more and more components, more and more detail. And as a result, it becomes huge. Because some kind of an stimulation has happened to the mind. So after this mental image appeared in the mind, it is very weak at its inception, at its early stage. But unfortunately, we got it interested, we are attributing some interest to it. As a result, now we are examining it more and more. As a result, we are fabricating it, we are adding it. We can't stop keeping it just it is. But we are adding from our side, and as a result it become huge, and now it even can become an obsession. So same thing applies when some kind of a object comes to the mind, and when we are attributing some grief, sorrow to it, and again it become very huge. We can't then even remove it, even if we want. Suppose there is kind of a ongoing sorrow available in the mind, and we understand, but it is not that useful, and it is some kind of agitation, is more detrimental to my health, and different drawbacks we understand. But unfortunately, we can't stop it, because now the mind has got its momentum, and we can't stop the mind, because it is going through this vicious cycle. So now Buddha is coming up with this 18 kind of mental exploration, and you can understand, as human beings, this is how our typical mind works. Actually, so far Buddha is giving this typical mind behavior, because not yet into the practice. Now, this is the typical worldly mind's behavior. When we see something, we are exploring more and more detail, either in order to get more pleasure, or to get more sorrow, or to get more equanimous. When we hear something, the same story. When we smell something, same. When we taste something, same. When we get into contact, again same. And when any kind of a mental object comes to the mind, the same story. So our mind has no peace at all. So it is always occupied, always working, doing, always in active mode. Now this is another explanation Buddha has given to Venerable Pukkusati. Now he is actually taking him to the practice site. Now he is giving another explanation, telling, so this so-called person consists of four foundations, or four resolves, we can say. Now here actually this is getting, Buddha is taking Venerable Pukkusati to the Vipassana side. He is taking, there are four foundations, and these four foundations are not Satipatthana. Actually inside this sutta there are components of Satipatthana, but these four foundations, what we call as Adhitthana, are not the Satipatthana here, but rather a different explanation is given, how one have to develop mind in different ways. One aspect is the foundation of wisdom. Another aspect is foundation of truth. Another one is foundation of relinquishment. Another one is foundation of peace. So we'll go through one by one, because this is quite interesting and in a way very deep and quite relevant to our practice. We can understand how Buddha very beautifully coming up with a strategy to develop our mind. And one item in that summary is that he is telling, according to these four foundations, there is a way to behave. And according to the, related to the wisdom, we should not neglect wisdom. We should not neglect wisdom. According to the truth, and we have to preserve the truth. That is what we have to do. That is the kind of a recipe. That is the kind of an action that we have to deal with truth. We have to protect it. We have to preserve it. And relinquishment, that we have to cultivate. We have to cultivate the relinquishment. And again and again, we have to train the mind to be at peace. Now you can understand, there are four foundations, or four determinations, we can say. And these determinations have to be practical. And so what is the practice related to wisdom? So we have to know about that. We have to learn about it. We should understand it. And that is what the operation that we need to do related to the wisdom. And the activity we need to do with the truth is that we have to preserve the truth. Once we recognize the truth, the proper truth, we have to preserve it. And Once we have a good understanding, assume that there is a relinquishment happen. Letting go happens in ourselves. So we have to develop that. We have to encourage that. And the peace of the mind has to be trained, because we are not yet trained to be peaceful. So our mind has to be trained again and again to be at peace. So let's see what is more and more detail, and now he is going to, Buddha is explaining more detail about each and every foundation. The first foundation, that is the foundation of wisdom. And you know now, and that should not neglect. So that is the point here, we should not neglect wisdom. And now he is explaining, Buddha is explaining in this sutta, what is really this wisdom. And he is telling one explanation. He is now taking one explanation he has already given. This whole so-called person is nothing but six elements. So this is one explanation related to the wisdom. And now he is explaining what is really earth element. So more detail are here. What is the earth element? Now the explanation here is again not that difficult to understand. Because sometimes you might have heard Asubha Bhavana, where 32 parts are sort of given. Most of you have heard about Asubha Bhavana. It has 32 components, 32 parts. Kesa, Loma, Nakha, Danta. Likewise, we have that list. In this list, the first 20 parts are quite solid or solidified. So therefore, Buddha is telling, okay, these 20 parts consists of majority this earth element. Head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lungs, intestines, mesentery, contents of the stomach, feces, and brain. So this is the kind of a typical explanation related to the body, and in this body all these are available. And now Buddha is taking most solid components to one group. And he is telling, okay, these 20 components, majority of them consists of earth element. And he actually does not stop there. He is telling whatever another component. Assume that there may be another component not in this list. If it is solidified, and then that also comes under earth element. So wherever earth element is predominant, it's a matter of putting that into this category. And earth element again become internal and external. Now you know, we consider this body belong to me and it is mine, and this kind of a perception is available in us. And this internal earth element is therefore consists of all these 20 elements. So this is a kind of a typical explanation at the beginning Buddha is giving. So just to give a different idea, different perspective, rather than thinking this whole body is I am. This body is just one unit. So that kind of a compactness, in a way it is a wrong view. We have that sammuti ghana. So we have a compactness, a view of compactness in our mind. Now Buddha is dividing it. It is not just a one body here. It is an accumulation of various components, various organs. So that information now is Buddha teaching us. And external earth element, it is not that difficult to understand. Maybe trees, houses, stones, rocks, and all these, whatever is solid or solidified, are all external earth element. That is not difficult to understand. Now, when it comes to the practice, how are we going to recognize earth element? So this is something interesting as practitioners, because these lists are important for us to get a different perspective about our life or about our body. And now we need to recognize this earth element in a more subtle way. Now, actually, we can understand, okay, what is head here, what is body here. That is not difficult. But that level is not enough for us to continue our practice. So in our practice, we have to recognize earth element more precise way or more primordial way in order to introduce vipassana to it. Or in order to understand three characteristics, we have to recognize earth element in a more subtle manner, more refined manner. Actually, if we simply say body hair is impermanent or head hair is impermanent, that is in a way true, not that false, but that is not enough. So, in order to recognize various characteristics of earth element, now we have to actually have some concentration available. Suppose you are developing anapanasati, or you do some walking meditation, and as a result, suppose you are gaining some mindfulness. Assume that you do walking, so now you are able to maintain your attention at each and every step. Suppose you do breathing meditation, you are capable of keeping your attention at each and every breath, different aspects of the breath. Now you can recognize whether it is long, whether it is short, whether it is warm, whether it is cold. So likewise, now your mindfulness become refined. And once mindfulness is well established, now you can recognize what are the characteristics available. Now it is not we are trying to apply any book knowledge here, but rather we are trying to sense, we are trying to experience the more basic characteristics. Say for example, at the beginning we have inhale and exhale. So this is a kind of a name we give to a long process. More we see it closely, we may understand it is not just a single inhale. It consists of very little accumulation of movements, or air movements, or kind of touching sensations. It's a kind of a combination, it's a kind of an accumulation. So likewise, we get a different idea about the existing so-called inhale. Similarly, exhale, it is not just a single exhale, but it's a kind of a series of minute exhales, a series of movements, or series of heat. So likewise, it depends on how we recognize it. Assume that you understood it as a movement, or whole inhale and exhale as a movement. Then that movement also become, it is not just a single movement, but consisting of very little minute kind of movements. So likewise, our mindfulness, as our mindfulness improve, clear comprehension also improve, and as a result we can understand all these minor details. If we consider, say, while walking, so our left leg is touching the ground, right leg is touching the ground, so we might even note it as left, right, left, right, just to establish mindfulness. So once mindfulness has well established, then we can recognize more detail. So what is really available when the foot is touching the ground, whether it is hard or whether it is soft, whether it is rough, whether it is smooth, whether it is cold, whether it is warm. So likewise, more basic characteristics we need to recognize. And as you know, while walking, probably you can even recognize that our body weight transfers between left leg and right leg. So this body weight also is another characteristic that we can recognize. Sometimes when we are lifting our foot, probably we might feel heaviness of that foot, of that leg. On the other hand, when we are placing it, probably we might feel some lightness. So likewise, there are certain characteristics to this earth element. So these are the characteristics I have explained here. Hardness, roughness, heaviness is one category, and the softness, smoothness, lightness are another category. Now these characteristics actually we can know. Knowing what I mean here is, it is not that now you are learning from this session as these are the six characteristics. That is also important, but that is not enough. We need to recognize all these characteristics through our meditation. As we practice, we have to understand what is this really heaviness mean, what is lightness mean, what is hardness mean, what is roughness mean. So all these we have to directly know. It is not we are trying to put any book knowledge here. Rather, when your foot is touching the ground, it is very directly that information is available, that characteristics is available. Say for example, even now you may have your foot touching the carpet or maybe touching the ground. So what are you feeling? Are you feeling heaviness? Are you feeling lightness? Are you feeling softness? Are you feeling roughness? Or is it cold? Is it hot? So all these basic level characteristics are readily available. But we typically neglect all these, and we are putting more conceptual information onto that, and we are going to various other stories, neglecting all these basic primordial characteristics. Now therefore, Venerable Matarushi Jnanarama Sero, who is the founding abbot of our monastery, and he beautifully says, the yogi, the practitioner, should know the language of these elements. Because otherwise we can't understand. Because they are talking on their language, and we have to attune to that language. Otherwise we can't understand. Say for example, if we are to recognize earth element, so we should know, okay, hardness is a characteristic of earth element. So likewise, we have to, when we know the characteristics, we can properly recognize the presence of various elements. Now, if we know that, more and more, as we walk, we may understand it is nothing but earth element. Say for example, you are simply walking, say 1 hour. So what are you experiencing? Maybe the hardness of the sand path, maybe the hardness of the coir mat, maybe the hardness of the cement floor, tile floor. So this is something that we can understand, not that difficult. This is actually quite ordinary. Don't think that you have to learn a book to understand this hardness. It is readily available. As human beings, we can easily recognize all these characteristics. But unfortunately, we are not happy about it. We want to have more juicy, more interesting experiences. Therefore, we simply neglect all these direct experiences. And we are putting, as Buddha mentioned in the previous section, we are putting more interest to the feeling tone. If it is happy, then we are putting more conceptual information to it. Whether I want to buy another carpet, whether I want to lend a carpet, or I am unhappy with this carpet. So likewise, we have a lot of vocabulary introduced, and we actually get lost into these concepts. But now we are going to more basic levels to recognize these characteristics, and as a result, we can understand, sometimes we can feel hardness, sometimes softness, sometimes roughness, sometimes smoothness, sometimes heaviness, sometimes lightness. All these six characteristics belong to earth element. Actually, whenever we recognize any of these characteristics, we can understand that is the presence of earth element. Now, is it only available within our body, inside our body? No. Basically, it is available even outside the body. If we are touching a chair, so chair you can understand it is hard. So hardness is available even outside. If you are touching a soap, so this softness is available there. Suppose you are touching flesh, so that meat, suppose you are going to cook. So at that time, suppose you are touching a meat, fish, or whatever it is, then kind of a softness may be there. Suppose you are touching various vegetables, so certain characteristics are there. When you are sweeping, suppose you have the grip of the broom. So you can understand that also these characteristics are available in outside. Suppose while you are brushing your teeth, you are holding the brush. So brush appear hard, its handle is hard. And the bristles may be also hard, but it's little different. If you touch your teeth, you can understand, okay, teeth has the hardness. Suppose you are touching a stone, the stone has this hardness. Suppose now you are taking a sponge to your hand, it is light when compared to a stone. So likewise, all these characteristics available in outside as well. Now more and more we develop our mind, more and more we develop our practice, then we can understand this both internal earth element and external earth element are merely earth element. Actually, the earth element doesn't know where it is located, where it is belonging. It is merely the earth element. We are the ones actually introducing, interpreting, telling, okay, this part is mine, that part is yours. Or this part is mine, everything else belongs to someone else, or maybe to nature. But even whole body, our own body is simply earth element, and outside also earth element. And outside doesn't belong to us, similarly this inside also doesn't belong to us. It is merely earth element. So these are a kind of meditative understandings or insights we can get. So when we are developing meditation, typically we call it as Dhatu Manasikara, element meditation. And more we recognize these different characteristics. So this kind of an understanding going to arise in our mind. So what is the understanding? Understanding is that internal earth element and external earth element are merely earth element. There is no any kind of a value-wise difference. We can't say, okay, internal earth element is more valuable, external earth element is less valuable. We can't say like that. It is merely earth element. Actually, these internal earth elements are produced when we are eating. I mean, from our childhood, we are eating, we are getting various foods, we are putting it inside. So as a result, all these internal earth elements are generated. But we forget it. We think, okay, this is mine, this is me, this is much better, this is more valuable than everything else, anything else, what is outside. But this practice takes us to a different understanding, different perspective, telling, okay, inside what is available is merely earth element, what is outside is also earth element, and they are very equal. And none of them are me, or none of them are mine, none of them belong to me. As a result, one can become little dispassionate about this whole earth element. Why are we going to grasp it? Why are we calling it as mine? Why are we trying to possess it? So likewise, more and more we look at our whole body and the whole outside material world within this kind of a perspective, this kind of a view, so this strong holding, strong grasping going to be weaker and weaker. It's going to little disappear. So we feel sort of disenchanted. We are not that struggling or quarreling with others just for this earth element. And you know, I mean, even if we put it to a more little conventional way, now how many countries are in fight just for the land? And how many families, how many nations are in fight just for land? And we are simply killing each other merely for this earth element. But if we as practitioners, if we can understand, okay, there are internal earth elements, there are still external earth element, as we can more familiarize with ourselves, more and more we develop, so this boundary, this demarcation going to become blur, become fade away, start to fade away, and as a result, this difference going to be less and less. So internal earth element and external earth element become quite similar, no much difference, it is just merely earth element. So as a result, our mind become dispassionate, not that grasping, not that quarreling with others, merely for this earth element. And as a result, our mind can become free. So this is how Buddha is explaining the earth element. And this is, he says, don't in a way neglect this information. So that is what the statement related to the, one should not neglect wisdom. So this is something that we have to try to understand. Simple understanding is also important. That is the typical conventional understanding. Okay, this body, even though I call it as me, mine, my body, it is not just a one unit. It consists of various components, various organs. That is one understanding. But we have to go deeper. And through our practice, after developing mindfulness and having some amount of concentration, we can go to the deeper levels, more primordial levels, and can understand what are the characteristics of earth element. So in the same line, I like to explain water element. This is not that difficult to understand. So similar way, Buddha explains water element. Now there are various watery parts available in the body, inside the body. Therefore, water element also internal and external. There are internal water element. So this is a list given. So this is also, 12 parts in the 32 parts. So bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints and urine. I mean, these are not difficult to understand. Whatever is watery inside our body are water element, because it is consisting majority of water, so therefore fluid, so therefore we can say it is water element. And similarly the outside, all rivers, rain, ocean and all these, whatever watery, consists most of water element. So this typical understanding or basic understanding is necessary but not enough. So we need to understand through our practice, through our meditation, what is water element. Say, whenever you feel that there is kind of a flowing happens inside the body. Suppose you are keeping your attention to a heart area, say for example. Probably you might have felt kind of a flowing. If you keep your attention to the mouth, probably you might have feel the wetness or the fluidity available in the saliva. So likewise, there is a possibility you may be able to understand these watery characteristics, and there are actually two. Now we had 6 characteristics for earth element, but for water element actually there are 2 characteristics, either flowing and the cohesion. If we consider kind of a powder, suppose we have some amount of cement. If we put water to it, we can make it kind of a solid. So that indicates that that's a kind of a cohesive characteristic, cohesive behavior is available in water. So whenever water is present, it binds everything together. It has this cohesion. So this, wherever cohesion is available, that is the presence of water element. So therefore we can understand whatever component we can say, whatever material we have, it actually has all these elements. I mean, it's a kind of a combination of all these elements. But one element may be predominant. Say for example, if you consider a stone, it still has some water element. That is why the whole earth element become bound together. Appears like one unit. The earth element itself can't do this binding characteristics, but the water element has that capacity. It is having the cohesion. So, because of this cohesive capability available in the water element, makes the whole earth element bound together. And now it appears like one unit, one stone. So, likewise, you can understand all these material world consists of four elements. This is one explanation given by the Buddha. Now, today's explanations are there, various scientific explanation. We don't need to go to that level. But rather, this is a simple explanation to represent all this material world. And flowing and cohesion is actually belonging to the water element. And more and more we understand this. So all this flowing nature is available inside. Flowing nature is available outside. Cohesive nature is available inside. Cohesive nature is available outside. More and more we understand it, we will understand, okay, there is no big difference. It is merely water element. We don't need to give more importance to internal earth element, internal water element, and give less value to external water element. They are simply merely water element. So more we understand that, so we can say, okay, even the external water element is not mine. So how can this internal earth element become mine? Water element become mine? So you may have a different perspective now. So you are losing the grip, you are losing the grasping. So you are now become a little dispassionate about this whole thing. So the mind become somewhat released, because more we grasp, more tensed our mind is. If we, the lesser we grasp, less tensed our mind is. So whenever if your mind become tensed, whenever your mind become stressed, just check how much are you grasping, how much are you holding. So if you can release that grasp, then your mind becomes somewhat free, somewhat less tensed. So this is a kind of a practical aspect. So therefore, more and more one understand that, so one become dispassionate about this water element, and mind become less tensed and less stressful, because these, considering all this belong to me, mind actually generate a lot of unhappiness in the mind. So this is related to the water element, and I think I don't have time to go through the rest of the elements because of the time constraint. So now I like to open the session for questions.
If anyone has questions, feel free to raise your hand. You can do so via the, if you go to participants, and then there should be a raise hand button there. And then, or you can also send your question to me via chat, and I can read it out loud for you. Bhante, I actually have a question. Maybe we'll get to this later on. But earlier, you were talking about the exploration. With the, you know, joy, equanimous, or grief feelings.
Yeah.
So, in practicing contemplation of healing, for me, I feel like when feelings become very subtle, it's actually very difficult for me to differentiate whether what I am feeling.
Yes.
You know, there is strong craving, you feel this kind of like a pulling of the mind. Or when there's strong dislike, you feel almost like a pushing away, like a repulsiveness. But when those type of actual, responses to the feeling disappear or become very subtle, how do we continue to be mindful of feelings?
Yeah, actually it is, that is the nature of the practice. Each practice takes us from gross levels to the refined levels. Even if you practice Kaya Anupassana, so you are coming from gross level to the refined level. Even if you practice feelings, so there may be at the beginning you can recognize various feelings. It may be pleasurable feeling, unhappy feeling, and even the equanimous feeling. quite easy to recognize. But later, more and more we recognize them, so they become refined and refined, finer and finer. So that is the nature. And similarly, even if you apply to the mind, sometimes the thoughts appear very gross. But later, they become weaker and weaker, and just a minor perception is there. So actually, this is the growth of the practice. Don't think that your mindfulness has reduced or it has become deteriorated. Rather, this is the nature of the practice, where more and more the mind become mindful about any of these phenomena. So it gradually starts to refine, kind of a fading away. So once it is fading away, so it's a matter of keeping our attention there. I mean, we may not be able to distinguish whether it is a pleasurable feeling or say painful feeling or equanimous feeling. We lose that distinction. Say, for example, even if you practice anapanasati, so at the beginning you can clearly recognize, okay, this is the inhale, this is the exhale, in breath and in out breath. You can very clearly recognize. But more you see subtle detail, now you are trying to see the beginning of in breath, middle of in breath, end of in breath, a little gap, then the beginning of out breath, middle of out breath, end of out breath, little gap, again the beginning of in breath. So likewise, more you refine information, you are trying to see closely. Now what is the ultimate result? So the breath going to calm down. That is why we say pasam bhayam kaya sankhara. Whole breath become calming down. So it is not that we are losing mindfulness or we are losing concentration. That is the way the whole scenario behave. So we can't expect the whole thing to appear fixed. Rather, we should have an open mind. Okay, these all phenomena are going to change. Now this change going to happen. So all these information now going to blur. All these demarcations going to blur. All marks going to disappear. It now you can't recognize whether it is in-breath or out-breath. Just a subtle sensation is there. You can't distinguish whether it is in-breath or out-breath. It is merely some amount of knowledge. Just knowing is there. So it is enough. Now you don't need to attribute any concepts there. Don't try to put a name to it now. Don't try to put a name telling, okay, this is in-breath, this is out-breath. But simply recognize it, okay, there is a sensation. There is some knowing. So the whole practice become more simple now, more refined. Similarly, when we apply to the feelings, so all the differences between different feelings, okay, pleasurable feeling is like this, neutral feeling is like this, painful feeling is like this. So all these are correct at the beginning. But more you recognize them very clearly, more into the more subtle level or basic level, primordial level, so these differences going to disappear. Because even the pleasurable feeling consists of a series of arising and passing away. Even the painful feeling consists of series of arising and passing away. Whatever the neutral feeling, it consists of series of arising and passing away. But when we can't recognize that subtle information, we attribute a name to it. Okay, this is a pleasurable feeling. This is a neutral feeling. This is a painful feeling. Likewise, we get the surface value, but more we go to the intricate level, more we go to the more subtle level, all that higher level or surface level information starts to disappear, but more and more the things become transient, and the differences disappear. And that is how mind now has the capacity to let go. Till we have given any names, concepts, various conventional values, then it is difficult to let go because mind have some importance to them. But when they appear, when they start to disappear and we can't distinguish all these differences, then it is quite easy to let go. So now slowly, mind will start to let go. Now all your experience appear like blurred. All your experience almost like disappeared. Your mind like to stay alone without getting bothered by all these experiences, all these feelings. Mind can simply stay alone. It can maintain its seclusion. It has its own freedom. It has its own independence. So likewise, this is a kind of a path where the meditation is taking you. This vipassana is taking you. Where at the beginning all the details are available, you are precisely knowing them, you are precisely understanding their characteristics. As a result, they start to fade away. As a result, there's a kind of a disenchantment happen in your mind. As a result, all these boundaries going to disappear. And this is what going to happen, so don't worry, you are in the correct track.
So, Bhante, if I understand correctly,
yeah.
When it gets to this kind of blurred experience, as long as our mindfulness is still there, and I guess in this case specifically, it's still available to whether all of the citta objects or the materiality objects, then that is enough.
Yes.
That's the right course of practice.
Yes, exactly. That's why, you simply have to simplify the practice now. Don't think that you need to carry all that information you had at your earlier stages. Okay, these are pleasurable feelings, these are painful feelings, this is equanimous feeling. Okay, this is left, this is right, this is in-breath, this is out-breath. So all these are some gross level information available at the earlier stages of our practice. But more and more our practice become refined, more and more mindfulness become improved, so that gross information going to disappear, all names going to disappear. Now we are coming to an area where we can't name them, we can't label them. So this labeling is not necessary now. We are the ones given labels, no? So all these labels now going to disappear, and we should not introduce labels now. So all these labels are merely concepts. So you simply neglect all these labels, keep just merely the knowing. Okay, different, some sort of a sensation is there, some kind of a feeling is there, but I don't have any either pleasure or pain or equanimity. Just kind of knowing is there. So like we discuss even just now, earth element. At the beginning there is a variety of earth elements. But later, once we are recognizing various characteristics, all that information, all that interest going to disappear. That is how the internal and external earth element become merely earth element. So that distinctive parameters going to fade away, going to disappear, and as a result, our mind becomes somewhat simple. Our mind become less burdened because nothing much to hold now. No too much information, no too heavy burden to hold. Rather, mind has very less thing to know, but very precise, very refined, very subtle. And now you can understand what is really happening to this information. Now you have very little information, just a single information, say for example. What is happening to that? Is it constant? Or is it arising and then quickly changing and then disappear or passing away? So likewise, for this feeling, now what you have, you can try to understand, is it a kind of a constant feeling? Or is it changing? Is it appearing and then disappearing? So this is a kind of a challenge you can give to your mind to very clearly understand the behavior of this available subtle feeling.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
That's deeply helpful. I received two questions here.
Yeah.
First one is, Venerable Sir, does the mind automatically get directed to the meditative conclusions? Or does one have to actively direct one's mind to observe these three conclusions? Much merits one take.
Yeah, they are very quite normal or natural conclusions. We don't need to condition our mind by forcefully introducing these conclusions. So that's why during our meditation, we should not take book knowledge into the front. Rather, we have to approach our meditation with a very open mind, very clean mind, free from any biases, free from any preconceived ideas. Rather, our mind has a very open kind of attentiveness, freshness. We are trying to recognize. We are also like a scientist. We are also simply learning from it. If we have any biases, any preconceived ideas, then our understanding is colored. Understanding is preconditioned. Rather, when we have simple, open, unbiased, unconditioned kind of an attitude, then whatever information, whatever insights available are very pure. And therefore, none of these spiritual conclusions we have to forcefully put into our mind. We should not brainwash ourselves. Rather, when we are going through our practice, it is a matter of continuing our practice. So the practice leads to these conclusions, leads to these insights. We can't actually forcefully arouse them. So don't try to forcefully arouse these conditions or arouse these understandings. It's a matter of continuing the practice. So when our practice is grown to a certain level, so this kind of an understanding is a cause and effect relationship. So that's why Buddha says, so when one has yathabhuta jnana dassana, when one has the clear understanding, nibbida viraga is natural. Nibbida is the dispassion, disenchantment. Viraga is the dispassion. So these qualities become, they are the result, and results become obvious. And you don't even intentionally look forward to them. Or you don't need to wish them. You don't need to struggle for them. You don't need to invite them. When your practice growing properly, so these results become cause and effect relationship. They are causally they are coming. That's why, that's a beautiful sutta called Chetana Karaniya Sutta. There Buddha says, when one has morality, so collected mind or kind of settled mind is obvious. You don't need to wish for that. And when that kind of a little joy is there, having higher joy is obvious. When such joy is there, having a bodily pleasantness, mental pleasantness, bodily and mental tranquility is obvious. When mind and body is tranquil, you feeling happy or feeling comfortable is obvious. When the comfort, happiness is available, mind get concentrated is a natural result. So therefore, the whole teaching of the Buddha is kind of a cause and effect relationship indicating. So therefore, these conclusions, don't think that you have to put forcefully into your mind, but it's a matter of more and more recognizing various characteristics of different phenomena. So more you understand the behavior of them, so these conclusions become evident.
Okay, Bhante. I received another question. So now we still have two left. The next one is, sometimes we have heard that everything is made out of thoughts and this is a mind-made world. However, when we practice and learn these suttas, seems there is a primordial knowing than the thoughts. Seems the thoughts and mind-made world arise after these knowing. Can Bhante explain this ambiguity with metta?
Yeah, actually, considering this whole world does not exist, Buddha says it's one extreme. And considering this whole world exists, Buddha says another extreme. So therefore, when one is telling, okay, this world is nothing but everything is mind-made. So that is, in a way, we can say is one extreme. When someone is saying there is no mind component, everything is physical, everything is material, that is another extreme. So Buddha says that rather than taking any of these extremes, he's preaching his Dhamma according to the cause and effect. When ignorance is available, there is formations happen, there is fabrications happen. When fabrications are there, then the consciousness happen, various knowing going to happen. So when various knowings are there, then there are various name and form, there are various mental images, we can say, appearing in the mind. So, and then the whole our senses going to operate, whole our senses going to be active. Then kind of contact happens. So likewise, Buddha beautifully explained his Dhamma without taking any of these extremes. So we can say, okay, there are sort of a mental part available and kind of a mental process available, and again a physical process available. So that's why in Vipassana, actually that is a kind of a later addition. So there is something called Nama Rupa Paricheda Jnana, where you can distinguish what are the mental components and what are the physical components. Suppose when you are doing walking meditation, when your foot is touching the ground, and you can recognize these element characteristics, whether it is hardness, softness, smoothness, lightness, heaviness, all these physical characteristics, element characteristics are the physical aspects. And the knowing we have, and how we know this hardness, how we know this softness, how we know this smoothness, that knowing part actually belongs to the mental process. So therefore, in this whole experience, nothing available merely simple, I mean, nothing but physical processes and the mental processes. So we can know physical processes through mental processes. Actually, they may have a sort of relationships, and more and more we recognize them. So it is, so we don't need to sort of strongly hold to any of these processes. We don't need to hold any physical process. We don't need to hold any mental process. We can simply be free from all these processes rather than become a victim of all these processes. And but you can't immediately do that. So you need first understand these. That's why through, say, walking meditation, we are trying to understand hardness. We are trying to understand softness, understand heaviness, lightness, all these things. Okay, when through breathing meditation, you are trying to understand what is heat, what is cold, what is movement, what is vibration. So likewise, you are trying to understand. Through, say, Vedana Anupassana, you are trying to understand different feeling tones. But because one, so that becomes one aspect. And then the knowing part become another aspect. And ultimately, so all these things, so you giving some kind of an understanding which is capable of freeing the mind. So mind has the capacity to be independent rather than getting hold to them, rather than getting stuck with this. And then mind become free. So there's a, it's kind of a natural awakening available for us. So it's, so Buddha is showing a path to that. So the prominence has to be given to the practice. So the practice is leading to these various understandings.
Thank you, Panching. I received another question, so we still have two left. How is Bhante's time? Would you like to continue to take questions?
Yes, no problem.
Okay. So next question. Bhante, greetings. I have a question and clarification. You explained how one can contemplate the earth element in walking meditation. Could you please explain how one can contemplate the characteristics of the first 20 body parts? For example, when one sits down to contemplate hardness or roughness of these 20 body parts, one has to conceptualize what hardness feels like. An example is that we have never felt our brain and do not know exactly how it feels. Please explain the best way to conceptually contemplate. Thank you.
Yeah, there is no conceptual contemplation. Rather, I mean, at the first level, we are simply trying to remove the typical compactness. We consider this body as one unit. But now Buddha is simply explaining, okay, it is not just one unit. It consists of various components. all these components has majority as the earth element. And of course, more you keep your attention to the body, probably you can recognize different components through the concentration. Those practices are also available, but I mean that still remove this compactness. But to get into the characteristics, you have to penetrate these names. Actually, you don't need to consider, okay, I'm trying to recognize characteristics, all these heaviness, hardness of the brain. Actually, then you are mixing the two. You don't need to mix these two. Rather, so recognizing different components is one level. Then fair amount of compactness may disappear. Then grasping, considering this whole body belong to me, this is one unit, this is my body, that is her body, that is his body. So that kind of a illusion may disappear, because you will understand, okay, when you consider this body, it is nothing but various parts. When consider another body, that is nothing but various parts. That is one level of understanding, one level of insight. But then when you are recognizing, or rather when you are practicing elements, so you can simply forget about these various components. But now you can give prominence to the characteristics. While walking, you are not trying to recognize different components and apply characteristics. Rather, you are simply applying characteristics. That's it. Say, when your foot is touching the ground, okay, what it's kind of hardness. That's why more you are into the characteristics, you need to avoid putting any labels. Now, Jennifer's question, she began her practice telling, okay, this is pleasurable feeling, neutral feeling, painful feeling, and later she loses that different names. Now everything becomes just a kind of a feeling. Can't recognize whether it is neutral, painful, pleasurable. Similarly here, we are simply starting with various labels, various components, head here, body here, like etc. But when we are putting characteristics, we simply have to neglect all those conventional level, conceptual level information. Now we are coming to the more basic level, more elementary level information, that is the characteristics. When you are touching the ground, what you really get the characteristic? When you are breathing, what is the characteristics available? Is it hot? Is it cold? Is it the in-breath become cooler? Is the out-breath become warmer? So likewise, now you are trying to understand the basic characteristics, elementary characteristics, and you can't do that by introducing those conceptual information here. So simply neglect all this conceptual information at that level and try to be with the primordial characteristics, the elementary characteristics, then you can get into this understanding.
Thank you, Bhante. Last question. When mind is settled, our thoughts become more vivid. Am I right, Bhante?
Yes, of course. So that's a nature. Actually, when our mind is cluttered, we can't recognize various thoughts. But when through the practice, mind become more and more pure and more spacious. Now the gap between various thoughts become longer. At the beginning, one thought after the other, one thought after the other. So you can't, it's difficult to recognize. But as a result of mindfulness practice, gap between thoughts become longer. The gap grows. Now one thought comes, and after a while another thought come. After a while another thought come. So likewise, your mind becomes spacious, less burden, and now very clear. Now you can easily recognize each and every thought.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. That is all for today's question.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much for participation. I think last time we could only cover just 1 hour because of another commitment. But today actually I was able to somewhat... Sorry? So last time actually I couldn't cover in detail because of various time constraints. But today I think we were able to cover somewhat detail. So I thank all of you for participation, and we can conclude our session by sharing merits in a brief manner. So if you can listen and share the merits. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sambe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ හිමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා හිමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු